Welcome to the PoliticalBetting.com Polling Matters podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley. Well, they often say that a week is a long time in politics, don't they? And I think in the case of the US presidential election, that is certainly the case. But a couple of weeks ago, we had the Iowa caucus results where on the Republican side, Ted Cruz won and Marco Rubio looked like he was going to emerge as a standard bearer of the moderate wing. But now, last night, we had the New Hampshire primary results and Donald Trump returned to form and convincingly beating out the competition, whilst Marco Rubio finished a poor fifth after a disappointing debate performance at the weekend. And suddenly, a man that no one's been talking about until now, John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, has emerged as potentially the next in line for the establishment nomination, if you like. On the Democratic side, of course, we may have expected what was coming a little more. Bernie Sanders, as the polls said, convincingly defeated Hillary Clinton. But now that that's happened in reality, do we think that Bernie Sanders might actually challenge Hillary Clinton in a more substantial way than the pollsters originally suggested? I'm going to be discussing some of these points and others on today's episode. I was joined earlier today by Kristen Soltis Anderson and Margie Omero of the US political podcast, The Pollsters. It's definitely one worth checking out for those people following the race closely. And I started off today's episode by asking The Pollsters what they thought, who they thought the big winners and losers were of last night's result. So, Kristen and Margie, thanks for joining us on today's episode. Kristen, I was going to start by asking you what you thought who you thought the big winners were from the GOP race last night. Of course, Donald Trump won convincingly, but I'd be interested to get your thoughts on who the big winners and losers might have been.
Well, I think the big winner overall is the pollsters here in the U.S. who got things right on the money, showing that both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump would win, and by very convincing margins. In fact, the only thing that the pollsters really missed on the Republican side was the Marco Rubio sort of decline in the late days, because polling sort of hadn't caught up to his final decline. But really, the winners, I think, Donald Trump has just cemented the idea that he actually is a strong contender, that this is not just an entertainment story, that this is real, and that he has a significant chance of winning the Republican nomination.
It's funny how things change, isn't it? Because last week, everyone was talking about, in the aftermath of Iowa, with Marco Rubio finishing third, that he was going to emerge as this establishment candidate, and perhaps Donald Trump really wasn't going to materialize, and maybe he would be in trouble in New Hampshire. But you know, here we are, a week or so, maybe a little bit longer later, and now suddenly everyone's talking about John Kasich. I mean, what do you make of him finishing runner-up?
So John Kasich really invested everything in trying to do well in New Hampshire in hopes that that would slingshot him into a stronger position moving forward. John Kasich will have some trouble moving forward, though, because his brand of sort of moderate Republicanism is not going to play particularly well in the southern states, which are next up on the calendar. And he does not have as much infrastructure in states like South Carolina as does someone like a Ted Cruz. So while John Kasich is, of course, certainly counts as a winner coming away from last night, it is still unlikely, in my view, that he will ultimately be the Republican nominee. Ted Cruz, I think, actually had a relatively good night, even though he only came in third place, coming in third place in New Hampshire, a state that is demographically not necessarily the best for Ted Cruz, I think puts him in a strong position because he does do very well in South Carolina and in the quote-unquote Super Tuesday states that we will vote in on March 1st. This was really a sort of worst-case scenario outcome if you are the sort of Republican who does not like Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, because there's not a lot of clarity about who the party should rally around to oppose the both of them. John Kasich did quite well. Jeb Bush, who folks had been counting out, actually did better than Marco Rubio, very slightly. And Marco Rubio, of course, having been the anointed one a week ago, now suddenly there's a lot of doubt cast around him. So it's a completely exciting race on the Republican side. We're coming up on the South Carolina primary in a week and a half. And it's still, we have no idea who is going to win, but Donald Trump at the moment is leading in the polls in most of the next states that are coming up in the calendar.
I mean, we'll come on to what maybe is next in the race and then look ahead to Super Tuesday in a moment. But Margie, I want to bring you in now. Obviously, Bernie Sanders won convincingly in New Hampshire, and to an extent that was priced in because the polls were pointing that way, and it's his neighboring states, from Vermont, obviously. But do you think that there's a chance that the scale of his victory last night might put some jitters, shall we say, in the Clinton campaign?
Well, I think it's fair to say that that's already happening. I mean, there's been early reports of staff changes and message changes. You also have different kinds of states in the next wave, whether it's South Carolina or Nevada, which are different demographically. They're more diverse ethnically and racially. They're also indicating the Clinton campaign that they're really looking to March to when the nomination will be decided. It's not something that's going. They expect to be locked up immediately. That's what they've been saying. Those are the kind of expectations that they've been setting with folks as a result of what happened yesterday. But make no mistake, the fact that Clinton lost in New Hampshire, I think, is a tough loss for them personally, because New Hampshire was a place that has been very good to the Clintons. It's where Hillary Clinton rebounded after losing in Iowa to Barack Obama in 2008. It's where Bill Clinton called himself the comeback kid way back when in 92. So it's very much a state that they've spent a lot of time in and that she spent a lot of time in over the years. So I do think that this is something that they're struggling with today. But as you said, it's not a surprise. Sanders has been up in the polling, in New Hampshire for months, really since the summer. So I don't think it was a surprise. I think it's the magnitude of the win that I think was a surprise to some.
I mean, can you put your finger on what's going on with Hillary Clinton's campaign? Because, yes, we expected it. But at the same time, there seems to be this continuing trend that when we look back to 2008 and now, she can't quite seal the deal with her own party, can she, even though she's obviously widely respected? I mean, why do you think she's struggling too much? Or do you think we're just over-exaggerating the importance of the first couple of races, maybe?
I think all that could be true. At the same time, I think there's some truth to all of that. I think that this is an election where people are really looking for something completely new, completely different. People are feeling, even though the economy has rebounded since 2008, as we, in the fall of 2008, people still feel that the country is moving in the wrong direction, that government dysfunction is one of the biggest problems facing the country. That's something that you see in polls across party lines. Chris and I, on our podcast, The Pollsters, we talked about a poll that showed a majority of Americans say they're open to a political revolution to redistribute wealth, which is a kind of shocking result that you'd see such widespread support for. So, at the same time, people are worried about big government. So I think there are a lot of concerns and anxieties that people feel. And in that context, candidates who say they want to challenge the establishment, whether that's something you see that in a Cruz or a Trump, or whether in a Bernie Sanders, different variations of this central point, which is government is not working, Washington is not working, we need to do something drastically different.
And of course, with his victory in New Hampshire, the scrutiny may ratchet up on Bernie Sanders now as well. I mean, what does he have to do in South Carolina and beyond to actually genuinely challenge Hillary Clinton for the nomination? I mean, there's lots of talk about her outpolling him amongst minority voters. Is it that straightforward? I mean, or do you think this momentum that he's got now might actually generally propel him into a position where he can win?
Well, for sure, the race will scramble as a result of what's happened in Iowa and New Hampshire. The question is how much. And we should also take a look at the advertising that the candidates are running in those states and the fact that Clinton is a known quantity with a variety of voters, and Sanders is introducing himself to some voters for the first time who are really just beginning to hear about him. So I think there's a chance that the gap between Clinton and Sanders will narrow in the next two states. And then there's also the states on March 1st, the whole next wave of states, where the Sanders campaign says they're focused on a few key states of that group. I think the Clinton campaign is focused on a wider selection of those states. We just don't know yet. I mean, this is moving at a very fast pace. We simply don't know where it's going to end up.
And Kristen, I want to bring you back in and talk a bit about the GOP race. Obviously, with such a crowded field, there's going to be people dropping out in the coming days and weeks, you would have thought. I mean, in your judgment, who do you think will we see the back of quite shortly, and who do you think might stay on, and how might that impact the dynamics of the race?
I think Chris Christie is one candidate who is unlikely to have much of a path forward, and it wouldn't surprise me if either shortly before South Carolina or immediately thereafter, Christie steps away from the race. I think the other candidate on the Republican side who has sort of run out of room to grow is Ben Carson. He's someone who was very strong during the summer of last year and into the fall in the state of Iowa. But his poor performance in Iowa really raised a lot of questions. He didn't even bother going to New Hampshire. His performance there was absolutely pitiful. And now even in South Carolina, a state that perhaps demographically would support him because it does have that higher proportion of evangelical and somewhat conservative voters, he's just not really shown that he's got a lot of fight left in him. And so a lot of folks are sort of on Carson campaign death watch as well. So those are the two folks that I suspect would drop out. My guess is that if Carson drops out, his voters would go to a mix of Cruz, Rubio, and perhaps Trump. I suspect if Christie drops out, a lot of his supporters would go to either Kasich, Bush, or possibly Rubio. The challenge that Marco Rubio has moving forward, and I certainly think he'll be in the race for the next couple of states, just because he had this poor performance in New Hampshire, he can rebound. But he really has to prove that he is the sort of candidate that has those great communication skills that endeared him to so much of the party apparatus in the first place.
And Margie, I'll bring you back in now. I mean, looking ahead to the sort of Super Tuesday races, I mean, what do you think we can tell from the types of states that are up in terms of how they might impact the race? I mean, do those states that are up on that day favor certain candidates on either side of the race?
I don't know if it's really one specific state or group of states. I think it's really that we're talking about a lot of states. So therefore, candidates that have the funds and the staying power and the organization to really fan out, I think will do better. That's going to be true of the Democratic side. Obviously, you have two candidates that sort of makes the chess board a little smaller. On the Republican side, you have so many candidates that there's going to be a lot more strategic thinking about where to prioritize, where to go, and wherever a candidate can really, you know, play in a variety of different states, that's going to be helpful in making sure that they have targeted the right place. And they can also be nimble if things change. If, you know, a candidate drops out or starts to do poorly or rise, they're able to kind of shift resources quickly. And that's the stuff that you don't really see quite as much in the news or in the polls, but it's very much a factor of what's on the ground.
I mean, Kristen, I'm interested in Jeb Bush because obviously he hasn't done particularly well so far, but then he's the one of the moderates, the so-called moderates, if you like, that has the organization and the money, doesn't he? So how long do you see him staying in? I mean, do you think he might even give Super Tuesday a crack just because of what Margie's been talking about? You know, he's going to have that organization, isn't he?
Certainly. I would be very surprised. I would be extremely surprised if all of a sudden you had Jeb Bush drop out in any way before Super Tuesday, because there's a saying that presidential candidates don't quit, they just run out of money. And Jeb Bush is in no danger of doing that in the short term. But remember, we have this sort of odd thing going on in our political process here where campaigns have certain amounts of money, but then we have super PACs that are outside of the campaign and aren't allowed to coordinate with them. And in Jeb Bush's case, it's his super PAC that has quite a bit in terms of resources. And so as a result, you know, Jeb Bush may want to stay in the race, may want to take on Donald Trump very vocally. But up till this point, his super PAC has actually been more focused on fighting John Kasich, more focused on fighting Marco Rubio. And so the strategy of Bush and his desire to stay in and what he wants his message to be as he kind of goes into these what might be his final contests could be very misaligned with what his super PAC wants to do. And it's his super PAC where tens of millions of dollars are still waiting to be spent.
And one of the people we haven't spoken about yet is the current president, of course, President Obama. I mean, you know, what role does he have in this race? It's typically the case that after sort of two terms of one president, you know, the candidates on the opposing party are very vociferously running against that president, that incumbent, and maybe the candidate on the sort of opposition side is trying to, on the same side is maybe trying to distance themselves from that person. I mean, we could think back to Al Gore running sort of away from Bill Clinton, maybe. In 2000. I mean, what impact do we think that President Obama is going to have on this race? I mean, Margie, I'll go to you first on that and then bring Kristen in.
Sure. Well, Democrats really strongly support the president. Democrats and Democratic primary voters love the president, feel that he has encountered just an incredible amount of gridlock here in Washington. I think the exit polls in New Hampshire suggest that folks who want to see the president's policies continued are supporting Clinton more than Sanders. So As the race currently exists, the president, I think, is helping Clinton more than Sanders. Sanders is, you know, seen as having some distance with the president or wanting to go beyond the president's policies in some areas. So I think for when it comes to the president, you see both candidates ultimately wanting to close that gap because he's enormously popular across the board with Democratic primary voters.
And of course, Kristen, on the flip side, and maybe this speaks to the polarization of American politics, the GOP candidates have to be very strongly against the president, and they'll have to repeal Obamacare and be vociferously against him, don't they?
I think one of the more revealing moments was the moment that Marco Rubio had in the last debate, where he kind of struggled and repeated the same line three times in a row verbatim, leading to charges that he's a robot. And that line was an attack on President Obama, saying that he believes President Obama is intentionally trying to make America less great and just one other country in the world. This is exactly the sort of rhetoric that a lot of Republican voters really resonates with them. They do not trust the president. The challenge, I think, for Republicans is if you look at President Obama's job approval, it's actually gotten better in the last couple of weeks. That President Obama, his status with independents, has recovered very slightly. He's not an overwhelmingly popular president, except with Democratic voters, but he's not an exceptionally unpopular president, except with Republican voters. Independents have rebounded for him a little bit. And so this will be a challenge for Republicans moving forward. Is certainly they're going to say they want to take a different path than President Obama. But how do they draw that contrast effectively if, for instance, voters start thinking that the economy is a little bit better, if they do start feeling that perhaps the world is a little bit safer? I think Republicans would bet that voters will still be frustrated with the economy and frustrated with foreign policy, but figuring out how to best toe that line will be fascinating to watch both parties engage in the coming weeks and months.
So we're going to let you guys plug your show before we go. But before we do that, I just want to close with some final remarks from both of you. One of the things that we do on this show, particularly in a race like this, is we say who we'd be buying shares in, hypothetically, and who we'd be selling, if you like. And then I'd ask each of you, which candidate on each side would you be buying shares in? But also, is there anything us Brits should be looking out for in the coming weeks that maybe we're not paying attention to right now? Margie, I'll start with you. Who are you buying and what should we be looking out for?
Yikes, lots of questions. Well, you can't actually go buy shares. I mean, that's now a thing where we've talked to folks who do the predictive markets, which are actually pretty good at predicting the outcomes of elections, studies show. I mean, I guess I would be buying shares of Kasich for now, right? I mean, I guess the easy money is on Trump, and, you know, I guess Clinton still has the edge on the Democratic side, at least in terms of what the, poll watchers and handicappers think. I would say Kasich is going to have, a bit of a bump now for a while. So that would be who I would put some money on the Republican side. It's certainly a candidate that I think Democrats worry seems a little bit more moderate relative to the field. Now that's, that the field has gone pretty far to the right, but I think folks see Kasich as somebody who, can appeal to folks in the middle a little bit. On the Democratic side, I mean, I guess it's tough. The predictive market certainly suggests, and the handicapper suggests, that Clinton has the advantage. But after last night, I think it's going to be a little bit more, a little bit narrower now for a while. As far as what we should be looking for next, I mean, I guess I would look at not just the polls. Make sure if you're looking at South Carolina or Nevada polls that they're recent polls, not polls from a couple weeks ago, because the race is going to scramble for sure. And also pay attention not to just the polls, but what's actually going on in the ground, the ads that people are running. Endorsements and the way the different campaigns are going to be reaching out to African-American and Latino communities headed into that next wave of states, as well as the rest of the early-ish for voting states in March 1st and March 9th.
And Kristen, what do you think? Would you agree with some of that?
I would agree that you definitely want to look at polls that are recent, and right now there's not a lot of recent polling in this next wave of states, so stay tuned to see what new numbers come out in the wake of New Hampshire. If I'm buying right now, I'm buying Ted Cruz. Most of the prediction markets have his odds of being the Republican nominee somewhere around 10 to 15%, and I think that's far too low. At this point, I think there's about a third of a chance that Donald Trump is the nominee, and I think there's about a third of a chance that it's some combination of either Marco Rubio, John Kasich, or Jeb Bush. But I also think you've got about a third of a chance that it's Ted Cruz. And the reason I say that is because his voters, again, look like the types of voters that you're going to see participating in these March 1st states in particular. He's going to be able to rack up a lot of delegates, and his team has been very explicit about using sophisticated methods to figure out where they can get the most delegates bang for their buck. And I suspect that Ted Cruz will be the sort of person who, if there's a contested convention coming up for the Republicans this summer, he'll be someone who comes in well-armed to take advantage of that situation to try to win the nomination. So I'm absolutely buying Ted Cruz at 10 to 15%.
And of course, if you want to follow the polls, I know there's a podcast in the US that you can sort of subscribe to do that. I mean, which one of you wants to sort of tell our viewers a bit more about that?
Sure. We are the Pollsters podcast. You can find us at thepollsters.com or on Twitter at thepollsters. Margie and I started the show after we were the bipartisan team doing some coverage for NPR's State of the Union night about a year ago. And we've been doing the show for ever since. We just taped our 51st episode today. We had on Joe Lenski, who is sort of Mr. Exit Poll here in the United States. And we'd love to have more listeners from across the pond. We love to cover international elections and hope to have many of you join us as subscribers.
Well, I know that people listening to this show and watching this podcast will enjoy your show as well. It's very good. They should certainly check it out. Kristen and Margie, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That was Margie Amaro and Kristen Soltis Anderson from the podcast The Pollsters there. Do check it out for those of you that listen to this show and watch us on this channel. And you're obviously interested in the polls and the sort of political situation in the US, and their show is really good. So do give it a listen. But one of the things that I thought was interesting there was they talked about buying and selling shares in different candidates. And I'm joined for the final segment of this show by Mike Smithson, of course, of politicalbetting.com. Welcome, Mike. And we were going to talk a little bit about what we thought the betting markets were saying about who you should buy and sell shares in. So John Kasich and Ted Cruz were mentioned there. I mean, what does some of your analysis show?
What we've seen in relation to John Kasich is how he suddenly came from absolutely nowhere and has now been trading at sort of 14, 15% when he was about 2, 1%. And he has really established himself. Now, we all know that, as has been explained, that he put everything into that New Hampshire fight. And in fact, that seemed to have worked. But has he got it in him to sustain it? And I think there must be a lot of doubts about that. And I think he probably would have gone higher, but for those big question marks. Obviously, I think the other thing which I think has really helped Ted Cruz is the fact that he is still there. He came out with a much better result than anybody was thinking about. We saw a massive amount of activity overnight during when the results were coming in. You know, hundreds of thousands of pounds were being traded, and Cruz is actually moving forward. But the other one who's moved and suddenly opened up is, of course, Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush worked for a long time. This fight was always going to be a Bush-Clinton fight, except it was a different Bush and a different Clinton. And what happened, of course, Trump came into the race in June, and Jeb Bush was then, I think, about a 55% shot to get the nomination, and he's declined and declined and declined, yet he's stuck in there, and of course he's got all the resources, he's got a fantastic war chest, his various supporting, or what they call PACs, as we discussed, these are bodies which actually support the campaigns. He's got a lot there. And he got a much better result than expected overnight in New Hampshire, and that's seen in the betting. And of course, we've seen a big shakeout. We've seen Christie out of the race. We've seen Carson, who knows. And effectively, we've now got this down to, what, five. And I think that is really going to focus it. I find it very hard to make a call. I think Trump is very dominant, and as the pollsters are saying, the pollsters came out of last night extremely well, and I think we follow them we ignore them at our peril.
I think one of the things that I've been saying in recent episodes of this podcast is that sometimes we don't look at what's directly in front of us. There is this tendency to see who's coming third and fourth, and therefore who's going to have the momentum and all these sorts of things. And we know in the GOP race, of course, when people drop out, there's going to be an impact of that. Yeah. But at the same time, Donald Trump did win convincingly yesterday. And if there is a fractured opposition, as we maybe saw on the Labour Party side, when, you know, obviously the flip side of the political aisle, but you know, Jeremy Corbyn had a very clear and consistent message, some would argue on the margins of politics, but then he had a fractured sort of moderate wing, and he obviously comes through. I mean, maybe something similar will happen with Donald Trump.
I think it's more and more likely that Trump will be the nominee. I mean, it's quite interesting because he was an odds-on favourite, but greater than 50% chance before Iowa. He failed to win in he failed to a certain extent in Iowa, and what happened, he comes back with this massive victory in New Hampshire, and he's now moving back towards being a 50% shot again. Rubio is now collapsed. I don't know whether he can recover. I know that the Republican establishment very much see him as the ideal candidate. They believe he is the one who could actually beat Hillary Clinton. But then, is it going to be Hillary Clinton?
Mm. Well, speaking of Hillary Clinton, I mean, obviously, you know, there is this consensus that she will emerge victorious eventually. And, you know, don't worry about Iowa and New Hampshire, because I think, as I mentioned on last week's show, Nate Silver ranked the 50 US states by how Bernie-friendly that they were. And Vermont was obviously number one, because that's his home state. But I think New Hampshire was number two and Iowa number four. So, you know, we saw this coming to an extent, but at the same time, now that it's come, I'd be very jittery if I was in the Clinton campaign.
Yeah, and remember that they pulled in the Bill Clinton card last weekend, and Bill Clinton was really launching a big attack on Sanders, launching a big attack on his campaign, accusing his supporters of being sexist in the way that they've been talking about Hillary and tweeting about her. And I thought that that was going to help bring Clinton back into the frame, and it didn't. And I think that is quite significant. The other thing, looking at the polling data we got overnight, is that Clinton was not getting the support from women that you would expect her to get. Back in 2008, when she won after Obama had won in Iowa, she got fantastic support from women. It was sort of 60-70% of women were going for her, and the effect of that was that she squeezed a victory which nobody saw coming. And I thought we could have seen a repeat of that. The fact is we didn't, and I think that's quite serious. There's another interesting little thing as well, and that is, remember Ron Paul from 2012? Ron Paul in the Republican race had these sort of crazy supporters, all young, all energetic, and what seems to be happening is that the Ron Paul factions are getting behind Sanders. And if that's the case in certain states, that could make a difference.
Very unpredictable race, and of course, lots to keep an eye on in the coming weeks. Mike Smithson, thanks very much. That's all we've got time for this week's PoliticalBetting.com Polling Matters podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. A big thanks once again to Kristen Salters-Anderson and Margie O'Meara from the Pollsters. Do check out their podcast. It's a great show. In the coming weeks, we're going to be looking more closely at Super Tuesday, but also bringing our attentions back home to revisit the EU referendum and also the Irish general election, which will be taking place at the end of this month. So do keep an eye out for more episodes, both visually and on the audio as well. And if you like what you hear, do share it with others on social media. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Do share this video. It all helps get our sort of message out there, if you like, and grow our audience. So thanks for watching. Thanks for listening to those of you on the audio. And stay tuned for some more episodes in the coming weeks.